Hello and welcome back to the Heart Song Yoga Podcast. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sarah.
And this week we want to talk a bit about, it's more, sort of more continuing on, our discussion of movement and where that comes from. Mm-hmm. And I was watching a video by Gil Headley, who, look him up on YouTube, is quite fascinating, especially if you're interested in human anatomy. And he was sort of discussing an experience of his in his I think college days or university days, where to make money he was baking cookies in commercial volumes. So he would bake pounds and pounds in America of cookie dough and roll it into logs and put it in the freezer overnight and on a Sunday, and then on Monday morning he'd have to get up early and cut all these cookies ready to bake. And he sort of went through this process of, you know, I mean, if you're only doing them for yourself, well, you just, you know, it doesn't really matter how you do it. But if you're doing this kind of volume, that has a physical effect. So he sort of started and does these funny demonstrations. It's like just sort of anchors the elbow and tries to work from the wrist. And like, well, that pretty clearly doesn't have enough power to get through this tough frozen cookie dough. So anchor the shoulder and work from the elbow and you got a bit more power, but that gets sore in the shoulder pretty quickly. So then he's like, well, okay, well, where next? And he sort of, it goes through the body, like from the extremities closer and closer to the core.
Mm.
And then it doesn't stop at the core, because he sort of tried that. He's like, right, well, what if I move from the hips? Mm. And he's like, actually, the movement comes from the floor.
Mm.
So it's like, how do you support this movement? You support this movement by having a strong stance on the floor and by using your entire body.
So is it almost like you anchor to the floor, or do you let that support come up under the earth through your body?
I think from a, like, if you want to take this another step further and sort of talk about it from a yogic and movement, quality of movement perspective, you're not necessarily anchoring to the floor, but you're working with the resistance that the floor offers.
Yes.
That's your source of strength.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, if you're in the vacuum of space, no amount of anchoring anything anywhere is going to have give you the ability to push something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you need something to push against.
Yeah.
So if you want to do a strong tree pose, you need solid earth beneath your feet to push up from.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's, you know, all of yoga poses really could be brought back to what is your relationship with the ground.
Definitely. Mm, definitely. Because at times you want to surrender into it and sort of give to it, and at other times you want to sort of rebound from it.
Yeah.
Don't you?
And yeah, and use it as an equal and opposing force. Mm. And there's a relationship there.
Definitely. That,
you know, if you respect, can be very powerful.
Yeah.
There's a dance principle that we were taught, which is you push down to go up. And you go up to push down, which basically means that if you want to if you want to lift, you don't just kind of think of yourself as lifting. So say in this case, if you're wanting to stand really tall in a posture, mm-hmm. You don't think of going up, you think of going down.
Yeah.
And if you want to be closer to the ground, you give that movement you much more strength and stability and balance if you think of lightening as you go lower to the ground.
Yeah.
So if if you're trying to do a movement where you're kind of crouching down or squatting or something, you know, think of elevating the body as you lower through space.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it makes everything so much more controlled and safer.
Mm. And then there's the whole aspect of adding your breath work to that, which adds another whole layer too.
Mm.
But this idea of moving, sort of coming back and coming back and working to have very embodied movement. It's almost like, you know, you really want to know your insides pretty well to be able to come from those spaces. And there was some exploration I was reading in a book by Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen, and she talks about moving from the organs, which is an interesting concept if you thought about if you were, you know, if you, what would it feel like to move from your heart? What does it feel like to move from your digestive tract? because that's a different movement. It's very similar to coming back to navel radiation and moving from the navel, but you can move this around and refine it more and more and more for different experiences of movement and embodiment. It's more about embodiment.
It's sort of getting to know your body too. Like, there's so much of our body, like we focus so much on the exterior of our bodies, and sort of what it looks like to other people, really, or in a mirror.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
And yet we don't sort of spend anywhere near as much time, and yoga practitioners probably more than, you know, do a little bit of this more than many, but we don't spend a lot of time thinking about what's going on the inside. And if we do, it's probably sort of, you know, you might pay attention to the lungs and the heart, perhaps, because you can breathe into them, you can feel your heartbeat.
And certain muscle groups that you might be familiar with.
Muscles maybe, yeah. But typically in a lot of yoga practices, even like classes I've done, we kind of skip over that inner anatomy and go straight to an energetic anatomy.
Yes.
So you start with the outside and you might get that sort of pranic exploration of the feelings over the skin and that sort of thing. And then the next thing you're looking at is chakra
movement.
Which is great. I'm not, you know, 100% that is a valuable thing to explore. But at no point have I ever been in a yoga class where it was like, what's your liver doing today?
No. Bring it right back.
That's an interesting question.
Yes, yeah. So it's almost like we're taking it from, you know, apart from moving the actual parts you can see and name, it's like then you take it another step further. If, you know, how's your liver today? You know, that whole.
Do you know where it is?
Do you even know where it is? Yeah. And what can you do to support your liver? Like if you know, there's certain movements, as you know, yoga movements do squeeze and massage our internal organs. So it's pretty handy to know where they are, so you know the impact you're having. Because a lot of our twisting and folding forward and back bending really has a huge impact. If you could know where the organs are and then begin to feel what effect you're having on them, that's pretty potent. And we have this ability then to sort of, it's like the power of affirmation or the power of our intention then to how we want to work with the insides. Because we can do a lot of restorative work and healing from the inside.
I mean, if you've looked into any of sort of like the meridian systems, you know they're all connected to the major organs. There is a lot of merit to exploring how these parts of our bodies are faring. And I expect that at first, you know, like anything, whenever you do your first sort of deep inner journey, like a relaxation or something, even feeling into your muscles when you're not used to that is hard. But the more you practice, the more likely you are to start getting a sense, an intuitive sense for how is this part of my, you know, how is my how are my kidneys feeling? How is my bladder feeling?
Yeah.
How are my, you know, inner, like sort of large and small intestines, stomach, all those parts of yourself that some you'll be more aware of than others. And I think it's just practice.
But then become aware of, you know, the pancreas. Where's my spleen?
And, you know, you might not even know what some of these organs really do, but just, you know, a little bit of Googling perhaps or look up a book or
just have a rough outline of an image.
Just print out a picture that, you know, sort of shows where those organs are. You don't need to know all the details of the physiology and the chemistry that goes into it. Just having that awareness and then just being grateful.
Yeah, and then you can.
They're doing something for you.
Yes, and sometimes I've done some really beautiful relaxations where in that process you can actually then bring in, because most of these organs are associated with an emotional aspect of ourselves. So, you know, the kidneys and fear, where you could bring in peace and into the kidneys, or, you know, the lungs and grief. Can you bring in some joy into your lungs? So then you can start to really work at those deeper levels of reprogramming.
They do all have emotions. Like anger is connected to the liver. And once you know that, and then you could sort of, you could even go in from an emotional perspective of, oh, I'm feeling angry today. So how is that impacting my liver? How is that impacting the choices I make about what I eat and drink that might impact my liver? Or the movements you might do, are you sort of very stiff or frozen in one area? This might tell you why.
It might tell you why. So it takes it to another whole level, which I think is really important. And it's, I suppose it's come up even more so for me because I'm actually studying anatomy and physiology at the moment to finish this Bachelor of Holistic Health Science. So I've been, where I've really been able to move more quickly through this unit is when I've been able to relate it to my yoga practice and myself. It's made a lot more sense if I can bring it into a real sort of aspect of use as opposed to just something out of a book. So, you know, there's lots you can do and it's
valuable learning tool.
It is valuable learning. Yeah. Yeah. So that embodiedness.
And I think, you know, sort of understanding, like, we have these discrete parts of our systems, but if you kind of, the further down you go, the closer you get to the surface, the more you realize those surfaces are not really all that discrete. You know, it's like the skin, when you look at it, looks like this well, you know, that's where I start and stop and where the rest of the world begins, you know, so is on the surface of the skin. But if you look at the surface of the skin, it's actually not all that smooth. It's a very interesting, deeply detailed textured layer of upon layer of cells, and the boundaries between us and the world are quite fuzzy, which I find quite fascinating if you sort of, you know, getting onto a microscopic level, which is the level at which, you know, we can effect conscious healing. And then thinking of that, I remember having the same kind of thought. This kind of goes back a little bit to that idea of your relationship with the ground. It was when I was studying, Drew, and we were doing the earth sequence, I think, outside. And we're all out in the grass. And I just sort of had this thought of, actually, we don't stand upon the earth. We stand in it. You know, like that one, similarly to, like, you sort of look at it and you go, okay, well, that's where the ground ends. There's the grass. And then everything above that is air. And then at some point the air stops and then you've got the atmosphere. And like, if you draw a sort of crude diagram, you will just have lines to represent those. But if you go into the details, actually the ground is many layers of different densities that eventually sort of almost fades into the atmosphere, you know, that then fades off into space. And then you are this kind of thing moving around at that intersection between the air and the ground. And what does that mean? Because you're kind of in the ground almost. It's on some level, you know.
Yeah, it can take you into to some pretty interesting visualizations, can't it?
It's an interesting space to think about, you know, in terms of, you know, you can root yourself into the earth in very meaningful ways. You're not separate from it. And if you were to look at, you know, the planet from space or from a great distance, you're not going to differentiate the individual people.
No.
It is all just one. So and at the same time, your body is the same. It is all one. But then you could, if you go down into that sort of much smaller level, identify the different areas of it.
Yeah, so we've touched on everything today, haven't we, from the gross part of the body to going right out there and then all the way back in again.
Yeah, gone from the vast reaches of space all the way down to the microscopic levels of how are the little, you know, the membranes of the lungs going. Are they sad? Are they happy? Are you breathing with joy?
Yeah, all that. So I guess it's like, be curious and open your mind as you move, and be open to listening, and listening not just with the sensory organs of the ears, but can you listen through every cell in your body as you move and sort of really hone in on that very deep inner awareness of what's going on and be guided by that. What messages might you receive from that? You know, we get quite distracted by external stimulus, I think, that takes us away from knowing ourselves at this intimate level. And therein lie a lot of problems with our health, and then wanting quick fixes and then seeking outside for those fixes. So it's like coming back and really listening with every cell in your body and drawing on the wisdom that you have innately within you, because we have it, and we're not sort of told about how powerful we are, and it's quite diminished with external messages from media. So therefore, you know, come back, and what wisdom do you have within you that you can glean the next time you step onto your mat?
Like, we become quite disempowered in the sense of how much and it's not even control, really, that we have over our bodies. I don't think control is the right word. It's a relationship.
Yeah, that's a nice way of looking at it.
And when that relationship breaks down, well, then things start to go wrong. And, you know, possibly there was something you could do to help with that. It might have just been that you bring your awareness to it, like consciousness awareness is healing. Or it might be that there was a behavior you needed to change and that was hurting you somehow, or a relationship with something else that you're in that, you know, or someone else that is not doing you any favors. And so, you know, those signs are there, but we're not encouraged to explore that inner space. So I would sort of say, you know, take your yoga practice is an invitation to go a little bit deeper than just, and the stretching is lovely, you know, like moving is, you know, any kind of movement is nice. And it will have an effect, but you could go further.
Definitely.
By really taking that, you know, how far in can you go? You know, can you kind of feel into your brain, not from a mental space, but from a physical space. Mm. Like, what does that feel like? Is, you know, is that feeling rested and energy, like, you know, energetic, or is it?
Is it feeling nourished and hydrated?
Is it, yeah.
Or is it withered up like a dried up walnut?
Or is it buzzing with sort of frenetic worry? Or it's just you get all sorts of things, and none of them are wrong. Like, it's sort of, so whatever you get, you know, and I think that's the thing with intuition, like we can't easily often quantify that experience. Mm-hmm. And so with our scientific paradigm that we live in, we discount it.
Mm.
But, you know, whatever feeling you get, the first feeling usually, it's nice, you might not accurate. Understand it, but it's not mm. wrong.
It's like when you get guided to go in, say, to do an internal chakra analysis. It's a tool I use in my yoga therapy where I'll get someone just to visit the regions, and I want to know the first thing that comes up for them. It could be a color, a sound, an image, it could be anything. And that's a really interesting exercise to do.
Yeah,
it's like training yourself. Just take that
training yourself to stop second guessing.
Yes, yeah.
Also, because that's what I've always found as I've grown up with, you know, and I've sort of done a lot of work on it, but especially as a kind of teen, I would second guess so much that intuitive sense. Mm. Like whenever, you know those stupid quizzes that you have to do where it's like the first thing you think of, and as soon as someone tells me the first thing you think of, I go blank, and then I think of five things, and then I can't figure out which one it is. It's like, you know, and the quickest way to shut down your intuition is to doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that doubt is what you feel keeps you honest. So it's because there is a fine line between intuitive answers and ego answers.
Mm,
and,
yeah.
So, you know, it's just something you have to practice, and it's okay to get it wrong.
Yeah.
I think we don't give ourselves that permission often enough.
Just keep practicing. Mm. Mm. Be curious and start noticing.
So, you know, if you're feeling like you're on your holiday from yoga class and you're missing it, and you're like, but I can't remember how to do EBR1 or even a tree or a warrior seat, just have a crack at it.
Yeah, and just perhaps go.
Get on the mat and have a go. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if what you do is a warrior or something else entirely.
Go and ask, step on your mat and say, how does my body want to move? And be guided by it. See if your body will guide you into a movement flow.
Mm. And then, you know, if you want to go a step deeper, which part of my body perhaps wanted this? Mm-hmm. Like, and just see if an answer comes to you. Oh, it was my pancreas. Mm-hmm. And maybe nothing comes to you, but you never know. Mm. It's worth asking.
Worth asking, yes. Interesting inquiry. I hope it's opened you up to looking at things a little differently and going a little deeper.
Mm. Yes. We will see you again next week. Thanks for listening.
See you then. Bye.
Bye.